The following podcast is a part of RadioMisfits.com.
Welcome to Misfits Bacon It. We're oddballs and we're doing cool stuff. I'm your host, Lauren Lojudice. This is the podcast version of the comedy shows I host around New York City and the road, the Misfit Variety Show, and all the shows at the Capiche Club Misfit Comedy Space down in Little Italy. So how's it going? What is up in your Misfit world? I've been doing a bunch of shows down here in Florida. Some of them are like a WWF match, which I say in the best way. It's just like people don't know how to behave down here. They've never had a theater culture. They probably didn't go to like Broadway shows on school field trips or like on the weekends with their parents. So, you know, it's all new here. So people, you know, speak like toddlers. They will speak back to you during the show. Like there's not supposed to be a thing where I ask a rhetorical question or I'm just kind of speaking on a topic, joking about a topic. They believe that they are entitled to a constant communication. And you know what? I'm all for it. I have done a ton of clown training. I'm just kind of eating it up. This opportunity to like get down and dirty and be in with the crowd and not give an F, not be fearful at all. This is, man, people say you can make it in New York, you make it anywhere. I think if you can make it doing comedy in Florida, you can do comedy anywhere. So it's been super fun. I've been having a lot of fun. Also, the fascism kind of gets to you. It's like this subtle thing where like people are disempowered from themselves. It's really sad. On the bright side, doing the Misfit Variety Show on Sunday in Boca Raton. This like kicks off basically my next 6 months of touring and putting my work out there in like a really big way. And it's scary, scary, scary. And I go to the farmer's market and buy everything, every product that assures me that it will decrease my anxiety, increase my mental functioning, whatever it is. I'm drinking this tea now. I don't know. I call them my witches at the farmer's market. I call all these vendors my witches because they have all sorts of potions that I don't even know what it is. I'm drinking some other this thing right now that's calm my stomach apparently. And it tastes like kind of sweet and sour at the same time. It's very interesting. So I'm filling up on some brews, on some witches brews, and getting ready for it. And so kind of like it's a growth period. It's exciting and anxiety provoking all at the same time. So that's how I'm doing. I'm really excited about this guest today because this is on theme for what I'm talking about. It is Elena Gabrielle, and she puts herself all over the world, self-produced artist, hysterical comedian. She's going to tell us how she did it, how she's doing it. It's a super inspiring story and you're going to love it. And before we get to that interview though, reminder to rate and review the podcast because listen, misfits trust other misfits to know what's good. You can also sign up at laurenlogi.com. That's Lauren, L-O-G-I. Or you can sponsor a podcast. We make it accessible for individuals or companies to sponsor us. We will put it, you know, we could put out podcasts more often than every other week. If someone wants to sponsor, we're here for it. Go to laurenlogi.com, click on listen and podcast and contact us there. All right, let's get to this interview with Elena Gabrielle. You're going to love her. You need to listen to her comedy special if you have not already. You need to go see her on tour. She's on tour right now. She's lovely. I'm so grateful to have been introduced to her. I was doing a show in Paris, actually. I love saying that. I was doing a show in Paris. And I asked Sebastian Lacaze, who runs the show New York, New York. It's a great show. If you're ever in Paris, go check it out. And I was talking to him about touring. And he's like, you know who you should talk to? Elena Gabrielle. And then I looked her up and I was like, what a great podcast guest. She's doing so much cool stuff. She's a misfit. She's making it. I adore her. And you will too. Let's give it up for Elena Gabrielle. Welcome, Elena Gabrielle, to Misfits Making It.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
So you're all over the place. I mean, you're performing all over the damn world.
Yeah.
how did your, and you're living in Berlin, but you're not German. Well, how did this all start? Where did you miss? Yeah. Why are you like this?
Yeah. Why are you like this? Tell me. I'm like, is this therapy now? Are we going to go into therapy? No. it's so hard to explain. I guess it's also like my life is so normal to me, but I guess like to other people, it's so like crazy and weird. So basically I was born in Australia. I have lived there all of my life. And then, but I'm also half Italian. So I have a very like European kind of upbringing. So I moved to Berlin. I moved to Berlin about 7 years ago because I had a lot of friends who lived here. And a lot of them were, at that point in my life, I wasn't doing so much stand-up. I was doing more cabaret, kind of like very subculture-y kind of performance ish, I guess you could say. Burlesque and cabaret.
Ooh, I'll talk about that.
Yeah. And then I found myself started doing stand-up. It's always something I wanted to do about 7 years ago. And I felt that I could do it here. And ever since then, I've just been like self-producing and traveling the world. And I've been performing everywhere. It's normal now for me. So yeah.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. So you're okay. So you were doing I also started out doing in the alternative space in San Francisco. Doing drag and several of my characters would do burlesque depending. It was more like performance arty type stuff. How do you feel like this prepared you for stand-up?
I don't know. I think the thing that I love about like, particularly being an artist, like I've always been in the theater. I grew up as a theater kid doing musical theater. And that was something that I always thought I wanted to do. And then when I did musical theater, I realized, musical theater is like a day job. It's literally like you go in there, you're told what to do, what to say, like, you know, certain hours per week. And I was like, I don't want to do that. That's boring. I mean, not boring, but it's just like, I just wanted to say my own thing and do my own stuff. And I think the beauty of coming from an alternative kind of background is that you get to like experience everything. Like if you learn improv and then you do music, like it just like as an artist, I think the more that we can absorb, it affects like who we become as an artist. And I think, and also doing alternative kind of stuff is that like, your audiences are just as weird as you are. So you have to really know. Like I did the Edinburgh Fringe for like 6 years and, you know, you're performing to like two or three people most of the time. And sometimes you're doing some weird stuff and they're looking at you being like, what? Like, and you're like, what? And I just think it makes you a better artist. And I think once you sort of, I'm 15 years in now into performing. And I think once I realized who I was as an artist, you can pick and choose of like, you know, what you like doing. And I still involve a little bit of like the kind of elements of my old alternative cabaret self, but, you know, sort of a bit more like palatable, I guess, for.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's like you're drawing from a bigger well.
Yes.
Because like, you know, I find like, so a lot of my characters, I'll like weave them into stand-up or I'll just do like character videos or impressions. And like, they're like, if you know about like drag culture, they're very much have like an influence of that. And it just makes them different. Like people are like, how did you come up with this? It just gives you like another perspective to come
totally,
from.
Totally. Totally. And I think also like, I mean, for me, like now a lot of my persona is very sparkly. Like I wear my sparkly shoes and all this, but that is a throwback to doing a lot of burlesque performances. Like, I mean, and also I think I was like, why can't I dress up sparkly and pretty on stage as a stand-up? Like it always frustrated me when, you know, I saw a lot of female comics that would just dress down, and I get it, like to fit into that masculine energy, sometimes you have to sort of, you know, bring yourself down. But I was like, no, like, fuck it. I want to wear something. So I think though coming from that kind of place is like, you know, you're accepted for who you are as an alternative kind of performer.
Yeah.
And then when you come into something a little bit more like mainstream, even though comedy kind of is now very mainstream, you can take those things and stand out, I guess, from the crowd. So
yes, because I could tell, like sometimes I'm watching people and I can tell, you know, whatever, everyone's journey is great and wonderful, but I can tell that they've just been hanging around a lot of like negative comedy rooms and spaces, and like in that, so they sort of like are drawing from the well of that, and then it just becomes like they're not like they have trouble with connecting with the audience, or it's just like the lowest common denominator kind of stuff. And it just, I feel like I was talking to some comedians, newer comedians the other day, and I was like, you know, beware of spending too much time in negative spaces, like where you're going to be. And so I'm wondering, how did you navigate that? Because a lot of space, well, at least in the US, there's a lot of negative spaces in stand-up world.
Yeah. I think, I mean, that's the beauty of traveling around and like also not involving yourself fully into a scene. Like I've always been that person that's like, like, which part of the reason why I left Australia, I felt like our population is very small, and there's a lot of competition for very little spaces, in particularly in the public. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, I didn't want to play the game. I didn't want to go and network, and I didn't want to be clicky. I didn't want to be like, I mean, I'm still there and I'm in the scene, but I didn't want to have to like kiss ass or like talk to people, because I felt like, I just wanted to let my talent speak for that. Like, I don't like, all of this is noise, but what I care about is like doing the audience and if they're enjoying themselves. And that's always been where I've come into it. And I think also, like, I'm a bit more lucky here in Europe, particularly in the English comedy scene, because it's very new. So you don't have a lot of this like old school mentality of, you know, like, oh, you've got to do your years and you've got to do your minutes and you've got to do that. Like, which is a very, I think obviously in America that exists a lot more. But whereas also I've come from Australia where we have done fringe festivals for many years. We go to Edinburgh, where every year you're creating a new show and you don't know what it is before you write it. You submit your application and be like, okay, cool, in 6 months I'm going to have an hour show and do it. So I come from that background, but I think it's also what we were saying before is I still now in Berlin, I still work, I host a burlesque show, but it's mainly because it's a collaborative environment. I find that stand-up can be so like individual and you're very isolated when you come to touring, or even if you're backstage, yes, it can be kind of fun, but I feel like it's very much just about you, your 10 minutes, your 20 minutes, like whatever. And I miss those ensemble days. I've come from theater where you're used to working with other people and doing this. So, I think there's a lot that you can learn, I think, from if you're just purely a stand-up. I think you're missing out on so much other wonderful skills that you can learn, and just the collaborative environment of being in, you know, that thing is, I find, the best than just being like comedy. But yeah.
Yeah. So much I want to say about that. Yeah. Absolutely. What was your burlesque name? We have to get that.
Oh, it was actually just Elena Gabrielle. So I didn't really ever do burlesque as in like, you know, I have a lot of friends that have their names and this kind of stuff, but I was always like a host. So I mainly hosted and emceed the shows, but sometimes I would do like some little funny striptease, but I would sing a song, like a parody song or something like that. But my nudity in a sense was always funny, and it was always to say something like, you know, stupid or like whatever.
Yeah, me too. I was like making a story and like some sort of point or some sort of character. It was always a character. It was never, you know, and like maybe people got it. Maybe they didn't.
That's the beauty of it. That's the neo-burlesque, which I love. Like, I appreciate the kind of very stripper, showgirl, Dita Von Teese style. I appreciate it. I've got a lot of friends that do it. But I love, like, the neo, the different. And that's – this scene here in Berlin is very, like, gritty. And also in Australia, the neo-burlesque is so funny, like, so funny. And you're just, like, crying with laughter. And you forget that people are taking their clothes off. You're just like, oh, this is, like, you're so engrossed in it. So that's what I love it. But yeah, I just used my name. I didn't want to like, you know, go for another like Ruby Lala or something like that. It was just never really my mind.
It's cool to hear you talk about how you're not particular in any scenes, because I've seen Jump as well a lot, and I'm like thinking like maybe I should just stick. I hate what you're saying. Like, I just hate this, like, because this group where you have group mentality, you have conformity and mediocrity.
100%.
And it just
And it's interesting, I know, because like, so I see myself and when I travel around the world, like, so for example, I just spent 2 weeks in India, in Mumbai, and the scene in India is unlike anything I've ever been involved in. The comedians all know each other. They all support each other. If someone has a new reel or a new YouTube video, they're all posting about it. They're like, go and watch this new reel. It's amazing. Like, and even in Hong Kong and Taiwan and Singapore, where I was just like over the last couple of weeks, the same thing. Like, everyone, it's a smaller kind of pool, but everyone's just so supportive of each other. And it's just so nice to see different scenes that are just, like very positive. And because there is a lot of toxicity in the stand-up world and a lot of egos and things like that. So it's always, it's always nice for me to just come in but be still on the outer, because I don't want to get involved in like the politics or anything.
Oh, look. The drama.
Yeah.
So India, did you meet Aditi Mittal or Radhika Vaas?
No.
Shout out to them.
Are they in Mumbai or are they in Delhi or?
They're all over the place, depending. So just, yeah, they're, I think they just, one of them went to Delhi, some of them, but they go back and forth a lot.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Everyone kind of moves. I'm mainly doing stuff in Mumbai. And then also I meet a lot of people and then I'm like, I feel really, really bad. I can't like their names. I'm just like trying to remember it like this. And I'm like, ugh. But it was, I mean, the scene, I'm still meeting this. There's also a lot of comics between.
Right. Always. It's like, someone's like, oh, do you know this comic in New York? I'm like, there's like thousands.
Right. Thousands. Yeah. But no, it's good. I actually I did a show with Veer Das last week because he was in town and he was doing, working some new material. So that was really cool because I think he's an amazing comic. So it was like the chance to meet him and kind of, you know, share a stage with him was also like really cool too. So the scene, yeah, I just, yeah, love it.
Oh, super fun. So when did you you basically decided 7 years ago mm-hmm. to start stand up. Mm-hmm. And then how long do you feel like it took you to find your voice in that?
Yeah, it was difficult at first because I was so used to being a character on stage. Maybe you understand this as well. Like when you mm-hmm. if you go into comedy or if you go into sort of performing as a like drag or a cabaret or like whatever, you are a character. Like you have, like you wear a wig or you like makeup or you got costumes. Like, so there's an element of like a fourth wall between you and the audience.
Yeah.
But with comedy, it took me a while to kind of be me because I knew that I couldn't hide behind a character. They were judging me now, not the character. Mm-hmm. And you can get away with saying so much more as a character as well. So I, that was a bit of a struggle at first, but it took me a while. I was still doing both. Like I was still working comedy, still working cabaret, for about a year and a half. And then I met, an American comic and then we started working together. We started working together end of 2016 and then he wanted to just do shows all around the world. So then we, came together and in 2018 we did 350 shows in 65 countries in 1 year. So we traveled like every single day doing a show and then that gave me at least 30 to 40 minutes of stage time every night and in, you know, over 65 countries. So it was one of those things where I would never do it again, but it just gave me those hours and just that consistency to like nail my own voice, my own style. And then, so that was like, we toured that show for like 2 years. That was like everywhere all around. And yeah, it was that, I think that was it. It's consistency and stage time. It was just like, that was kind of the thing that really was able to hone my skill.
Wow. So, okay. So you're basically, we're like, we're going to go, your plan was to go on the road with him.
Yeah.
And you were going to just go to all these countries. So how did you plan that?
I know. So he's originally from Jersey, but he lived in Silicon Valley in San Francisco for many years as well. So he came at it from he was working a lot in startups. So he had this very like kind of startup mentality to touring, but he'd never produced anything. But I'd been producing for like about 10 years as an artist, like, you know, self-taught producing, blah, blah, blah. So when we came together, it was like we were able to, we used a lot of this like kind of testing the market. So we would put out Facebook events and we would like put money behind the event and test the kind of the market and see whether there was an interest in the show in that country, in that city. And if there was a low cost per click, we then would put money behind it. We would find a venue, a comedy club, a bar or whatever, set up our own tickets and sell it. And so like a lot of it was kind of on the fly. We were still working the tour during the year as well. So it wasn't all done in advance. It was very much like 2 or 3 months in advance. And then we'd look at where we want to go, where we think we could work, blah, blah, blah. It was very just like on the fly, but yeah, it worked. And also the challenge of performing in countries you've never performed before. And you're like, is this going to work? I have no idea. Like I have absolutely no idea if this is going to work in this country.
Wow. So you basically were like, set up a Facebook event for a mm-hmm. date and maybe didn't put the address or.
Yeah, exactly. Just put the, yeah.
And then if you got a low cost per click, you were like, we're definitely going to do this. And then you found a venue for that date. Mm-hmm. And then you booked the venue.
Yeah.
And then you then started promoting the event.
Yeah. Putting tickets on sale, putting more money behind the ads. We basically, I mean, this was in a time, this was 2018. So Facebook ads were still very effective. I think now they're not as kind of good, but yeah. And so that's how, like, literally we were able to do anything. And sometimes we, if we weren't sure, we would just take a risk anyway, and it would work out. So yeah. And we were doing shows in places where there was no one doing English comedy, like through the Middle East. Like, also we did it in Egypt, in Morocco, in Lebanon. Where else did we go? Like, all through Asia. Just, there was just no one else doing it. And I'm not sure if anyone else would be stupid enough to do it, but it was, yeah, it was like an amazing experience. And it was just like, and we, the thing was, we also didn't really sell it as a comedy show. It was a storytelling show about dating. So we didn't sell us as comedians. We were just like, hey, this is, you know, like the Moth kind of thing, these kind of like storytelling shows, but it's funny. It's about dating. Come and tell your dating story. We'll tell ours. Like, so it was marketed in a very, a way, because everyone, you know, like, it's, dating is a very international topic. So it was easy to sell in that regard. So yeah, so it just kind of all, everything kind of just like worked, and it was just like, yeah, an amazing experience. And to do shows.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Like, yeah. Crazy.
Right. That's amazing. Well, the that's something I've found too. Like, just if you're not like worldwide famous, you have to create a concept that's bigger than you, that people can hold on to and come.
Yeah, for. Exactly. Exactly. And that's, I think that's the hardest thing, where people who are starting, I mean, I'm very lucky. And then from that show, when we stopped, we were still touring, like right up until like our last show was March, like, I don't know, 13th or something in Latvia. But we were lucky because everyone was like online. We had all these years of footage. We were like, well, we're not going to do anything with it. We might as well put it online. And then it just started picking up on the algorithm. And then I was able to get a, like a big following. And it was like, oh, okay, then I can just try and tour this like solo. And so I still use everything that I've learned in those 3 years to now self-produce my own tour. My own, so without, I've been doing that now for, yeah, nearly 2 years, like all around the world as well. So yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And are you using the same technique, the Facebook?
Yes, same technique, kind of thing. Also, I think, like I said, Facebook ads are not as effective now. So you really have to be on TikTok and YouTube and Instagram and like all the things to be constantly putting out reels and still keeping in the zeitgeist of people's, you know, algorithms. So yeah, still using the same kind of thing, and also just choosing the places where I kind of know we sold before, and then like, or sometimes testing the market as well. Like, I went back to India. I wasn't sure the first time we went, we didn't have a great time, but I had a bit of a following now. And so now I've gone back and I've done really well. So it just depends. Like, you sort of kind of have to test the market as well. So it's like, a business. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. And so then you're going back as yourself.
Yes. Yeah. So just solo, just Elena Gabrielle, which it doesn't, it's a bit of a harder sell, because it's like people like who also as a female comic, it's like, it's a little bit more difficult. But yeah, but for the most part, like it's been great. And yeah, I've been able to
That's amazing.
Go around the world.
Amazing.
But yeah, fun.
Super cool. Yeah. And then how many hours a day does it take you to, are you self-producing? Like, not, and that's not with like, I think not with like, not counting social media, because that's a whole other thing, but just like
the logistics and stuff. Like,
logistics.
Yeah, I think, so I realized it got to a point basically kind of like this time last year that I just knew I couldn't do it myself. So I hired a personal assistant, and who's virtual, and she does, like, I've taught her everything in terms of like ticket sales, venue, all this sort of stuff. So she really helps with the bulk of that. And also as well, like, you know, like there's no hours with comedy. So she's always happy to, like, you know, she does a few hours every week. And then the most part, I still do a little bit here and there, but, she's now sort of taken the bulk of that, like, logistical stuff that takes then away from my creative time, writing and getting up on stage and doing all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, that was something that I had to delegate. I'm like, no, okay, you need someone to help.
Right. Yeah. And how many hours a day did it take you, like, when you were doing it yourself?
Oh, I mean, it was like, I mean, I'm sort of a bit of a workaholic, so I would always be working. So mm-hmm. I think, it was definitely a few hours every day, but I mean, for the most part as well, like, I've worked a lot with these venues for many years. So a lot of them, I would just email again, be like, hey, and then, you know, so, and it's just like, I go on autopilot, just setting up tickets and, you know, this kind of stuff, Facebook ads, like whatever. So it kind of just disappears. I don't know how long it's been.
Yeah.
But if it means I get to, you know, still travel and perform and stuff, then it's something that I'm happy to do in the, yeah, in the Lumen
Forum. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. Yeah, super good. I think it's good for people to hear like that it is doable. Like it's not like it's a few hours a day. That's not like 10 hours a day. Like exactly. It's still possible.
And you can, and it's also like the scale of it. You know, I'm definitely not doing 300 shows in a year anymore. But you know, if it's someone who's still starting out, who has another full-time job, like you can start small and do, you know, one show a month or, you know, two shows a month. And then once you sort of get used to it, cause it's not easy. I've had a few friends that have, you know, reached out and I've told them how I do it. And it's kind of overwhelming. Like, I mean, I show them my budget spreadsheet and they're like, what is this? I'm like, but that's how organized you have to be in terms of budgeting and everything. So,
right.
Yeah.
Because you're doing it. I have a show called Misfit Variety Show that mm-hmm. I'm looking to tour, and I've talked to so many people about touring, and so many people tell me I actually don't make any money on touring. Mm-hmm. I lose money. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because they're not organized.
Yeah, it's definitely it's hard to kind of figure, I think, as well. I think it's also different in the States. The States is very it's a different beast, I think, because I feel like if you don't have a big enough following, it can be difficult. And I remember when we toured there, it was always a bit of a hard sell because I felt like there wasn't anything, you know, sensational about like what we were doing, or we weren't a name, or we weren't a celebrity, or we weren't attached to anything. So America's very different. But in terms of like Europe, I think people are willing to come out and see stuff. And, you know, if they see something online, like a video, and they like you, they'll definitely come, and they're very loyal. So they'll come back again and again, and sort of see you. So yeah, I mean, I understand America is a very, very different beast. I'm make a tour there early next year, but I don't know how that's gonna go, so I'm a bit worried. I'm like, ugh. But yeah, we'll see how, but it is very different over there, 100%. It's
a bit harder. It's different, but I think and also you're very organized, you're very good at what you do too. I mean, there's also that, like,
yeah, having- I think the people that make the mistake, and people always say to me when I'm on tour, they're like, wow, like you're like in a different city every day and you're like traveling. And I'm like, yeah, because financially it makes more sense, because okay, cool, yeah, I could go for a weekend and just do one show, but that's not going to cover my costs in terms of hotel or flights or anything, because you think about that time outside of not performing, how much are you spending, this kind of thing. So yeah, when people always say to me like, oh, it's every night, I'm like, yeah, because when I'm on tour, I'm also in work mode and I'm on tour. Like, I don't have the energy to go and sightsee and do this kind of stuff. I'm there for the shows. And I also find the shows give me they give me enough of a kind of cultural experience that I don't feel like I need to go out and see, you know, different things in the city. But I also go back to a lot of these places. So if there is something I want to see, I will eventually. But I think that's the biggest thing. I think people kind of go like, oh, you know, you need to stay a day or two and do this. And I'm like, that's financially, that's not how it works, you know? And I think like that's better to compact a tour financially, but also in terms of like performing, because you want to just kind of keep on it every night. You want to have that consistency in the stage time to really work it. So I think that's why a lot of big comedians do like big tours in kind of like chunks. It just makes more sense. I mean, also for me, I mean, I've seen it every time. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll just go on a weekend and come back, and it's worse. Like, you just have to, you have to compact it. I tried that this year. It was like, oh, I'll just do one show a week and like I'll fly to this place and fly back. And it's just not as viable. So
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I hope this is like interesting. I don't know. Like, for me, this is just my life. So I'm like, but I don't know if people will find
it. I mean, it's super interesting, because I feel like the thing that people ask a lot about, like, is a lot of people who listen to this are fellow misfits, and they're like, how is everyone doing it? Like, everyone's obsessed. And I think we need to talk more honestly about like, how are we doing it? Because like, it's not some magic thing that like falls from the sky. It's like strategy.
Yeah. It's strategy. It's also marketing. It's really marketing. And it comes back to, you know, how do you sell it? Like, if you have a Facebook ad, like, what is your tag? What is the thing that's going to grab people? And yeah, it's, that's really what you're getting people in, and you're going to find the best reel, the best clip that's super viral. And then you're going to, you know, use that for ads, and that's the thing that's going to get people in. And it doesn't matter if it's, you know, a joke in the show or an old joke or a stupid joke. It's like, you just need to get people's attention now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your, everyone has different opinions on this. Like, like putting up your jokes online, do you have any policy, like only jokes you don't do anymore, or like only crowd interactions, or what's your take on that?
To be honest, I kind of feel like I'm not famous enough that everyone knows my bits. And if I put stuff online, like I find everything that you put up in terms of TikTok and Instagram and stuff, if you put it up, it's kind of like there for a little bit and then it disappears. Like no one's really going back. Like maybe like obsessive, like, you know, fans or like whatever. But I just find that there's like, I used to worry about it. I was like, oh, but if they've heard the joke and everything. And I'm like, really, from my market research and talking to people, there's like 5% of the people who have in the audience who have actually seen that bit online. And I mean, a few, yeah, like, I don't know. I used to be very pedantic about it, but then now I'm like, no, because like that's the stuff that's going to get them to the show. And maybe that little bit is like 2 minutes of your hour and the rest of it's different. So yeah, I don't really care too much about it. Like people say it's burnt material and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, it's burnt material when you're sick of doing it, basically. Like, and I mean, I'm sure you have as well, seen comics that have been doing the same bits for like over 10 years. And you're like, well, they're still doing it. Why am I still writing a whole new hour every year? Like they're still doing the same 10 minutes. So I think that's it. I mean, it obviously depends, like unless it's a super, super viral bit. Like I went and saw Angela Johnson many years ago. And I'm sure you know her nail salon clip, which is like where she goes into the Vietnamese nail salon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, iconic. And I remember I sat there and I was like, in the whole show, I was like, do that bit, do that bit, do that bit, do that. Like, which is not something you feel as a comedian, people don't
really do that.
But she did it. And then everyone was like, yeah. Like, so I'm like, people also enjoy it. Like the hearing the
yes.
again. And so
it's like your friends, you know, like tell that story again. Like Mike Birbiglia does a lot. The him meeting Obama bit.
Yes. Yeah.
And telling him they're pregnant. It was. Yeah. And I just love hearing it again. It's just a lovely story.
Yeah. And that's it. I think. And there's something special about being in the room when people are telling you that bit or mm-hmm. that bit. Like, so yeah, like, yeah, I don't really care too much. And there's just too much on the internet now that like I just sort of, sometimes people are like, yeah, I don't want to put it up because it's like my best bit. I'm like, you're not Bill Burr. You're not Dave Chappelle. Like, just like, please, you have 5,000 followers. Like, it's okay. Like, just, you know, you can put it out, but at least that's going to get you more followers. And then you're going to write some new stuff. Like, that's what it's going to do. It's going to force you to write more. So yeah, I don't know. I don't really care too much.
That's helpful. Yeah, no, it's true. Cause it's like, are we that important? Like, who's that important? Very few people are that important.
But it's also like, you, like even talking to people, like even if I ask like normal people who aren't comedian, like obsessed, comedy obsessed, I ask them like, oh, you know, what bit did you like of this person? They're like, oh, it's the bit where they're just talking about like this, but they can never say the joke word for word. But they're like, oh, this, like, even for me, they're like, oh, my favorite bit of yours is like the French guy story or the German vegan story. And I'm like, yeah, cool. But like, they never can say like, oh, this joke word for word or like this kind of stuff. So in that sense, I'm just like, oh, okay. Like it's, you can do bits and pieces. It's
Right. So when you travel to so many countries, like how are you creating material? Cause you have to create material that's going to apply.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, the beauty of comedy now is I feel like it's very like homogenized because particularly post COVID, I think pre COVID, there was still elements of like, what is this American stand-up comedy thing? But because of the lockdown, I think there's a lot of people now who watch YouTube, who watch Netflix specials, and they get it. So I find it's been a lot easier post-COVID because people have kind of had that element to it. But I mean, there's always like elements of like writing local jokes, absolutely, and kind of making. But there is that. Like I always try and write local jokes at the start just to kind of like, you know, interact with the audiences and stuff. But then it's also on me then in my show, if there's references or things, it's like you just have to try and explain it in a way that they're going to understand or and maybe they might not laugh as much as like another country or like another, like whatever, another city. But then I always try and get like local comics on as well. Like local female comics is preferable, like when I'm touring, because then they bring the kind of like local flavor to the show and they make local jokes and then people like, you know, have that. And then it's like, oh, okay, then here's like Elena coming out. So, but I just still do crowd work in my shows, and that's, I love that as well, because that also helps me kind of like ask questions about their culture or particularly dating or these kind of things as well. So yeah, it's cool. And it's a challenge because it makes you write all the time. Cause I could be, I've seen a lot of comics. Like I think you also came to Paris and did the show with
Stephanie. Yep.
I saw a couple of comics that came to Paris from New York, and they were just doing New York material in Paris. I seen in Berlin, and the audience is just like, I don't know, like, yeah, I mean, I know it from movies, or I know this kind of stuff, or like, you know, whatever. But yeah, just bizarre. So yeah, I think it's really, it's always great experience to try and write new stuff and just keep, yeah, I don't know, keep the creativity kind of going.
Yeah, that's really exciting. That's really fun. Mm-hmm. I've been finding too, like sometimes I'm like, wow, people really love telling someone who's not from there, like what it's like there. Even at like, I'll perform somewhere like Delaware, like how dull is Delaware? And you're like, what's this Delaware thing? And they're like, oh, we got something to say. You know, it's really fun to get that from the audience. They like almost like give you the gifts.
Yes. 100%. And I think, yeah. And I look at the biggest comedians like in Australia that do really well. And a lot of them are like Irish, or like they're people from outside Australia. And I notice this everywhere, even for me in Germany, because I'm like, oh, you Germans, you do this. And they're like, oh God, we do what we are. And so it's like, you know, they have this like, and it's true. I would feel like that when, you know, someone like an American or Irish would come in and be like, oh, Australians, like you do this. And you're like, oh my God, we are so weird. We do that. Like, so I think there's an element of like, if I was an Aussie getting on stage, I can't really, like I can say it, but it just doesn't hit as much. For comedy and stuff like that. Because as a foreigner, you see things in a completely different way that maybe someone normally like would just see as like normal. And you're like, no, this is weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Super fun. And then when you're getting local people, I mean, both for the show that you started, dating show that you started with, and now like, because I book local people on my thing. And I find that is actually a detriment to me touring a lot, because it takes so much work to find good people that are appropriate for the themes of the show. Like what, any tricks, tips?
I don't know. I think I'm really bad with stuff like this, cause I just give everyone a chance. Like I think as well, most of the people that I do give my spots to are people that actually just reach out to me on Instagram or, this kind of thing. And I find that there's an element, of, because I've said yes, they then feel like, oh shit, I've got to bring the best 7 minutes that I have. And I've been very lucky, because most people who have opened for me have come into it being like that. Like comics I've also worked with on open mics where I've seen them not do so well, but then I've given them the opportunity to open for me and they've really stepped up. And it's because, so when I opened for Eliza Schlesinger like 2 years ago now, like when she was in Europe, and I was so grateful because I was like, oh my God, thank you so much. Like, thank you so much for like letting me open for you. And I was so nervous. And she's like, oh, I don't care. She's like, if you're shit, like it makes me look better. And if you're great, it makes the show better. So I don't care. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. Like, and then I was kind of like, which is a weird way of putting it, but it was also like, oh, like, yeah, if I know my show is good and my stuff, it doesn't matter like with the opener if they're not, but I'm also giving them a chance as well. So I think I sort of took that school of thought where, and I learned so much from doing that. Like when you open for a big comedian, you have to go out cold to like 1,000 people and you just got to do it. So now if I have people who open for me, they're like, are you going to introduce me? I'm like, nah, like you gotta go out there and you gotta open. And so I'm trying to like also, you know, give them advice and give them a push to do something that maybe they wouldn't have like ever done. So yeah, I think, maybe I'm the wrong person to ask for that, but I just give like everyone kind of a chance in a sense, because I think I've been very lucky in my life and been given a lot of chances. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Like, I mean, it's good to trust people. Like when you trust people, like people kind of, you know.
I mean, it doesn't always work, but for the most part, I've been pretty lucky with that. So
yeah.
And the worst case scenario is they're only up there for, you know, 5-7 minutes. So like, you know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's not going to kind of. So what would be like your like misfit turning moments? Like when were you like, did you know that the traditional world, quote unquote, was not for you?
Good question. I think I always knew I was a performer. Like, that was always something that I've just never not considered. I tried to get like a real job when I was fresh out of, like, I went to like a really good acting school in Australia, and those places just like tear you down. Like, they just rip you to pieces, and like, you're a shell by the time you get out of it. And then, so after that, I went for a few auditions, big auditions for musicals, and just like, I had the worst auditions. Like, I hate auditions. I'm not that person. But put me on stage, I'm fine. And so I just had some really awful, like, I was going in for like a Wicked audition, and I'm like singing this big operatic tune, and like the auditionees are just like, like doing this. And I'm just like I just cry after it and stuff. And I thought, like, this isn't for me. And then I was like, oh, maybe I need to get like a real job. And I just got a real job, and I was just like the saddest and most depressed of my life. And then I realized, like, the only thing that keeps me going is being a performer. And I think that's when I kind of knew, like, and so after acting school, I fell into a really bad bout of anorexia. So I was in that for like many, many, many years. But the only thing that sort of kept me alive was I found burlesque. Like, I was looking at these women who, you know, weren't the body that I thought I had to be. And I just saw them loving themselves and in all different shapes and sizes. And I thought, like, and that sort of pulled me a lot out of my like anorexia, and just being around that body positivity was great. And then I started, I started being a part of like this burlesque, like, and like subculture, and it was amazing. And I found these people that I really connected with, who I'm still, a lot of them I'm friends with today, and who are also kind of misfits and a bit like not traditional, you know, tradition, whatever that is. And then sort of, yeah, just run away from the circus and join the fringe. And that was like, I don't know. Yeah. That's when I realized, this isn't for me. If I'm the carny for the rest of my life, then that's, so be it. It's fun. I have so many stories from that. So, and I prefer stories over, you know, just the kind of 9-to-5 job, 1,000%.
My misfit moment, I was in a musical theater dance class, just trying to figure my way around show business. And they started talking about auditions to be like a teacup in Beauty and the Beast. And I was like, I don't think this is for me. I think this is.
Yeah, once you realize the boat, because I loved musical theater, but then going to like musical theater school, it just killed it for me. And then I have a lot of my friends are still in it. And like, my friend played Rocky in Rocky Horror Show in Australia. And he was like, yeah, Eleanor, he's like, I have no social life. I literally go, I do the show, I go home, I sleep, I wake up, I go to the gym, I eat, I go to the theater. And that's his just life for like months. And I was just like, is that like, whereas with me, I'm like, yeah, I'm just doing a show tonight in Berlin, and I'm going to go down to like Paris, and I'm doing this. So yeah. That's the life that I want, you know, and I get to say what I want and do what I want. So yeah, it's, you know, definitely musical theater is prestigious and all this sort of stuff, but it's not for everyone, I think.
Yeah. Cool. So what is your, in moments when you're, you know, we all get filled with self-doubt, what's a misfit inspiration that you might have, you know, a book, a quote, a person or mantra, whatever it is?
Yeah. Good question. I think, so a few years ago I did The Artist Way, which I'm sure like you probably know about, a lot of people.
Yeah, an often mentioned book on this podcast. I feel like we should be like a sponsor.
I know, right? It's one of those things where, like, my friend did it years ago, and he kept telling me, and I'd it's always been around for many years. Like, people had said it, and I'm like, oh, I'm down. And I did it during COVID, and I really found that to be incredibly helpful. I think The Artist Way comes into your life when you're ready for it. Like, I think if someone forces it on you, it's not the right time. Like, you have to sort of know about it and do it. And so I find that sometimes I'll go back to, I definitely still journal. I try and do my morning pages, or now I do it more at night because I just need to like empty my brain before I sleep. The other thing that I find is super, super, super helpful, particularly for comedians, is Gary Goleman did like a 365 writing tips on Twitter for. And honestly, whenever I'm feeling like, like I'm supposed to do a new work in progress show on Friday, and I'm like, fuck, I haven't written anything. So I'm like, this week is just, I will go back to that list. I think Vulture actually printed out, like, it has the whole list in one web page.
Oh, cool.
And that for me is just, it just always reignites a spark. It always makes me feel better about myself and where I am. And it also, not in a way of like, yeah, you can do it, but it's like, it's more like inspirational in like terms of writing and getting back to the creativity, which is why you do this in the first place. So, yeah, I think between The Artist Way and then Gary Goleman's writing tips, I they're my Bibles, like, for.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. We'll link those in the show notes for sure.
Yeah, 100%.
So I have a question from one of my characters. Mm-hmm. Her name is Queens Marie. All right. Okay. Hi, how's it going, Elena Gabrielle? So it's so exciting. You like left. I like have a pass. Like, I don't have a passport. I'm not going to lie. I like don't have a passport. I've like never left New York, but like one time I like went to Baltimore to like watch some douchebag. Like, I was dating a douchebag and he liked baseball, and I like went to Baltimore to like watch a baseball game. Big mistake. It sucks. Okay. Listen. So I am like becoming a budding media personality, you know, like all over talking about like esthetician type thing. Like, I'm the number one neighborhood esthetician. So if you need your first facial, come to me. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, want to include things about like dating, and like I've dated a lot of douchebags, but now I'm thinking like, is it going to like inhibit my dating life? Because then they're going to know I'm going to talk about them later. So what do you, could you talk about dating mm-hmm. and stuff? So like, how does that work for you?
Well, I can give you a bit of advice. I find that they, especially for me, they watch a lot of my stuff, so they kind of know what I do. So I feel like if you engage in any dating with me, if you swipe right, or if you like start a conversation, you are signing a waiver to be included in my life and in my kind of thing. So I think maybe like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I've had some people, I don't normally talk about people that I have deep feelings for or first starting in them very, like if I fall in love with someone, I'm not going to talk about them like on stage straight away.
But straight away.
But they do know like what I do and what I talk about. And I think there's also an element of, you know, I think everyone's got an ego, particularly men. And I think there is an element of like a lot of them, like they like it when I talk about them on stage because they're like, are you going to? Are you gonna put this in your show? And I'm like, no. Like, but then I also have some people who are like, you know, I want to go on a date with you, and then I want to come to the show, and I want you to humiliate me in front of everyone. And I'm like, yeah, that's. I don't do that.
It's a kink. That's a kink.
I know it's a total kink, but I'm like, I'm not that. I'm not a roast comedian. I'm not like that. So,
yeah.
But I think for the most part, yeah. Like, I think if you're gonna date me and you know what I do, then you've signed the dotted line.
It's kind of amazing because, like, if like things aren't going well, it's like, watch your fucking mouth. You want this to go viral on TikTok?
But also, if they're like, oh, are you going to put this in your show? And or they're like, oh, are you going to talk about us on stage? I'm like, yeah, you better work hard enough. Do you know how many like stories I've got? Like, you got to up the game. You got to be like the best. Like, you got to do something really wild to be included in my shows. So
you got to out crazy the other crazies.
Exactly. Basically. Exactly. 100%. So yes. Yeah.
All right. So, that's interesting. Like, people going to try to out douchebag the other douchebags, which is going to be a whole other thing. So, All right. You have no idea what the shit I have to deal with. Anyway. Okay. So I'm going to go back. Maybe I'll leave New York. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe they have to leave New York and go on tour. I'm going to go on the esthetician tour. That's the thing.
Amazing. Yeah. Give some facials and dating advice at the same time. You'll be fine.
That's a great show. I could do a facial of someone in the audience on stage and give dating advice.
Yeah.
Wow. This is exciting. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So I'm going to go back. I got an appointment in 2 minutes, but thank you. So good to see you. Thank you so much. Bye. Thanks for playing with Queens. That's Marie.
Great. I love the accent. I love it. It's great.
I grew up in Italian Queens. So it's sort of close to home.
Love it.
So tell us, where can people find you, hang out with you, follow you?
On all of the social medias. I think Elena Gabrielle on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. I think it's real Elena Gabrielle because someone stole my username. So that's fine. No, I didn't steal it, but like someone took it and I was like, that's not okay. So that's fine. I don't know, on website, everything. But if people can't, if they don't know how to spell, if you just type like Eleanor comedian, I will come up because I think I'm like the only Eleanor comedian in the world. So it's pretty, you'll find me if you just type Eleanor comedian or Eleanor stand up. So yeah, Eleanor Gabrielle, catch me on a tour. I hope to be in the States hopefully next year. Still waiting on my visa, but we'll see. Watch this space.
Oh, wow, because you need a visa. If you're here for more than 90 days, you're going to be more than 90 days. Is that the...
No, you need a work visa. Like, you can't come and do shows on a tourist visa. Otherwise, you're... Yeah. And it's so funny because everyone in America is like, oh, my God, come to America. I'm like, do you know how fucking hard it is to get a visa to the US? Like, to work, it's not easy. So, yeah, I always feel bad, but I'm like, like, it's very... it's not easy. So, we'll see.
Hopefully. That crunchy makes it so difficult.
Yeah, it's very expensive, and I've been waiting now 3 months, and I will probably be waiting more than that.
So. Wow. It's like, what are you going to do? You're going to go do jokes around steal the joke time.
Yeah, I think the whole thing with America, like the immigration is like, they don't want you to come and then like, you know, stay or like, you know, or you have to prove that you're, you know, an exceptional talent, an alien of exceptional talent, which is the visa that I'm applying for.
Right. So. It's like, there's been 400 mass shootings in 2023. It's not even over yet. Like, no one's trying to move here.
Yeah. I will always live in Europe. I don't like want to settle in the States, but I have most of my I have 40%, 50% of my analytics is American. So it makes like, it's kind of like makes more sense to come and do tours in the States. So we'll see.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed. Okay. Super exciting. Well, we'll look forward and we'll definitely like let everyone know when you're in the States. It's super fun.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming by. Well, there you have it. You can follow the podcast on my page at Lauren Logie. Updates and inside info on my email list, LaurenLogie.com. Thank you to Annie McCutcheon for editing, Edward Silla at Radio Misfits Podcast Network, and Maddie McLennan for making the podcast art. Thanks to our listeners for bringing us back for another season. We'll see you soon.
The preceding was a presentation of the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Find our other great shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at RadioMisfits.com. Thank you.